The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Aidan Regan is with me though in the meantime, a professor in the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD. Aidan, are we living in a post-literate society?
It's a good question, and I think we are not quite there yet, but we're on that trajectory, yes.
Why?
Well, I mean, I think it's probably fair to say that the trend has been coming for quite some time. I think anybody who works in education would have noticed this over the years, particularly with students. I can only obviously speak on what it's like in the universities, but definitely there is students have less capacity to read for a long period of time. They have less capacity to critically digest long texts. They have less attention span. But so do we all, right? And it's because of these things we carry around in our pockets and our hands. It's the screen. So once you're so easily distracted and you're competing for attention, the ability that you might be able to sit down and read a text by Joyce or something from Hegel is probably a little bit more difficult these days, you know?
And does it manifest more in the reading or the writing side of things, do you find, in the academic sense?
Well, I think we're entering into the writing side because AI has now amplified these trends. So I think the screen, smartphones, you know, our lack of a capacity to stay mindful and keep attention and stay focused obviously distracts from your ability to read deeply. And therefore, your inability to read deeply means that you're less likely to understand things at a deeper level. And of course, that will there's a spectrum there in terms of literacy, but that's obviously a key component of being literate, right? But what AI, I think, has done now is two things. Firstly, you know, students, anybody can effectively just put a text into ChatGPT and get a quick summary. And it is extremely powerful at parsing complex academic texts, identifying key arguments, highlighting assumptions, and extracting evidence at a pace that, you know, your brain just wouldn't do in a short period of time. So because the machine can do that for you so quickly, you can get that information literally in a couple of seconds, whereas otherwise you would have had to spend a few hours reading it and coming up with yourself, right? So you're just relying on the machine to think for you then. So you're relying on the machine to think for you, to read for you, and then also you can walk into a classroom and just kind of regurgitate the summary of what AI told you, even though you haven't read it yourself, so you don't understand it deeply. But on top of that, now you can get AI to do the writing for you now. So you can then put the same bullet points back into the machine and say, write me a 2,000-word piece or an 800-word piece. And in all probability, the AI machine is going to write it better. This is uncomfortable for a lot of people to hear, than an undergraduate student is going to write it.
Yeah, I know I should be worried about the direction of travel we're all on, but my main feeling is one of just envy that this didn't exist all those years ago, 25 years ago when I was in college. Thomas Kenny is with me at Kenny's Bookstore in Galway. Thomas, have ye seen this in terms of trends when it comes to book buying or what's being read?
Oh God, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's so many varying degrees where it pops up. I mean, AI in particular is the single biggest worry in the kind of book world at the moment, because if you were to go onto Amazon, where you can self-publish extraordinarily easily, it's flooded by AI texts, you know. So there'll be, for example, if you go onto Amazon now, there'll be like a history of the Traitors TV show on RT, you know, or something of that today, you know. It'll have been done kind of so quickly overnight and so on. But I mean, from us, from our point of view, we see it a lot with things like if people are applying for jobs, you know, and there's a cover letter. The cover letter is very obviously written by AI frequently, or shows things like, I suppose, difficulty with grammar or with spelling or that sort of thing in the text. If it's not AI being used, you know, things like, you know, loose instead of lose or vice versa or that sort of thing very frequently, or you know, the number four as opposed to F-O-R okay, being written out, that sort of thing. See it an awful lot, and it's becoming more and more prevalent, yeah.
I'm glad you said loose and lose and not affect and effect, because I have an absolute intellectual blind spot when it comes to that, and I'd get that wrong, Thomas, if I was applying for a job in your own bookshop. Aidan, how have you then had to change the way you run the course or the way you teach students based on all this?
Well, this is a big debate, as you can imagine, in education. And the reality is AI is going to revolutionize everything, right? And it's going to revolutionize education. And that train has left, right? I think my own view, you know, a few years ago would have been, look, do we want general purpose AI? Yes or no? I would say no, but that train has left. And if we do want this, you know, who's going to own it? What are the proprietary rights behind it? I mean, we're not obviously at general purpose AI yet. We're using very, very sophisticated, extremely capable large language models. The train has left, and there's a debate in academia as to whether you just accept that and adapt to it and integrate it into your teaching and assessment, or you try to fight it. My own view will be you just have to adapt to it, you know. So for example, you have now colleagues who, you know, a large part of their assessment and tasks is, you know, how to what are you asking the machine, basically? What is your prompt? What is your nudge? You know, what I would do personally is I would ask a student to send me the text that you used before you submitted it to AI and afterwards. Right? And why is that important? Because I think, look, the reality is using AI, ChatGPT, to improve the quality of your narrative, your grammar, etc., is not necessarily a bad thing, particularly for students whose English is not their first language. Yeah. So a few years ago, we have a lot of non-native English speaker students, right? And quite frankly, it's difficult to read a lot of their text, and you have to be, you know, you have to be aware of that, and you have to kind of, you know, be mindful of it. But now that doesn't happen anymore, right? So it seems to me that there's an issue if you get AI to write the text for you. That's a real problem, because you've done no thinking, you've done very little prompting. But if you get it to just simply facilitate and improve your text, okay, that's a debate. So I would always get the student to submit the piece that they submitted before they used it and after they use it, so I can identify, you know, where it has been used. And it also ensures that the student actually tries to write it themselves before they use the machine to improve it.
Well, I like this. Kieran, Aidan sounds very like AI. He's summarizing a complicated issue and he's asserting it with a high degree of confidence, and he hasn't cited any sources. Says Owen in Monkstown. There you are. You're indistinguishable from AI yourself, Aidan. But Thomas, before I let you go, there'll be a cohort of maybe younger listeners who would suggest we're kind of just, you know, three old men shouting at clouds or raging against the dying of the light. This is just, you know, the nature of evolution and the evolution of language.
Yeah, and maybe they have a point. You know, I mean, I do think it's a really complex issue, and it's not one that that we should kind of trivialize. But I think Aidan did a really good job there of linking kind of one thing leads on to the next. You know, and one of the big things for me, I think, is the literacy and the phone usage kind of deficits leading on to difficulty concentrating. And, you know, that's what we really need to concentrate on. You know, there are so many studies saying if you read, for example, a book on a screen and you read the same book in a physical form, you retain far more once it's in the physical form. And, you know, it's those sorts of things that, you know, the education system at, you know, first, second and third level are all bringing together, and, you know, hopefully we continue it. But, you know, absolutely, we may well be ultimately three old men shouting at clouds.
On that note, Thomas Kenny at Kenny's Bookshop in Galway and Aidan Regan, professor in the School of Politics and International Relations in UCD. Thank you both very much. Terry Prone is with me, the chair of the Communications Clinic. Terry, are we living in a post-literate society?
I don't think we're gone quite that bad yet, Kieran, but we're certainly on our way to it, because you are already seeing differences in, I know we look at AI and we think it's way before that, that literacy appears. A good example is if you take, and it may have been before your time, but there was a character called Rupert Bear.
Rupert Bear.
Rupert Bear with his little yellow scarf. And if you take any of the books of Rupert Bear from the 50s and 60s and compare them with any children's books today, the sentence length in the Rupert Bear books is twice what it is now in most children's books. Twice, not a little bit longer, but twice as long. Now, why does that matter? It matters because it causes children's gaze pattern to be different as they're looking at longer sentences, and it allows for the freighting of one or two ideas into a sentence. So the child learns to be analytical and to understand more than one thing. So the literacy thing is starting earlier, the reduction in literacy. However, the fact is that one of the simplest tests for children, predictive tests. If you go into a child's house, you can predict whether the kid at 18 is going to be literate, is going to be able to spell, grammar, punctuation. And oddly, that's if there are books in the house. Once you have books in the house, I don't know whether it's by osmosis, but the fact is that children become more literate.
But is this reduction, as you describe it, is it really just, you know, evolution by another name?
That's a really good question, and in many ways it is, except that it is spilling over into areas that are not productive. For example, we would have a careers unit, and we would often say to people, okay, send us your cover letter, send us your CV. And you look at a CV, and one of the things that the person says is, I have great attention to detail. Except that, as one of your contributors said earlier, they haven't distinguished between L-O-S-E and L-O-O-S-E. They haven't bothered to proofread their own material, which says something profound about their employability. Anybody who reads CVs for a living, who reads cover letters, will quickly decide, without the help of any artificial intelligence, this is a dud.
So I wonder then, is it actually writing that we will see this degradation more pronounced, you know, when it, because you're right, AI and all of that might and Aidan Regan earlier was talking about how they use AI to read these big, large bodies of texts, you know, academic texts. But you're not going to use AI to read a novel for you. You're still going to read that out of enjoyment. But you certainly could see a world in which some people are still reading, but there's nobody writing anymore.
I don't think it's just writing. I think, first of all, it's listening. People who don't read don't listen either. They want it quickly and more simply than we can do it. And the second thing is, your professor earlier said an interesting thing. He said that when students use AI, he says to them, give me your original before you submitted it to AI. We would go further than that. We would say to anybody who says, I did this and then I tried AI, we would say, hang on a second. What skill have you learned as a result of submitting it to AI? Because if they just submit it, see that it's made clearer and shorter and crisper and better, but don't learn how to do that themselves, they are becoming more dependent on the machine and less literate themselves.
Terry Prone is the chairman of the Communications Clinic. Terry, it's always good to talk to you. Thanks a million.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.